Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Georgia-Florida line. I hope that you guys are doing well. We are well off to the month of February. The month of March. Oh, man, I'm a month behind. We are in March now. And just a few reminders, as I reminded you guys last week, I certainly want to make sure that we all remember that we are beginning to head into severe weather season. This is the season where we begin to see the strong storms, the pop-up thunderstorms. It was roughly around this time of year, a couple years ago, that we had the tornado to go through North Columbus and over into areas of Talbot County. So this time of year is always very tricky. It's very tricky. So we just have to make sure we keep an eye on that. There may be a weather system moving through the early part of next week that we certainly need to continue to watch. And with that said, we are still in the middle of COVID season, you guys. Please make sure that you are wearing your mask. Make sure you are socially distancing. Make sure that you are using hand sanitizers or washing your hands frequently. That is so important to help us continue to stop the spread of this very, very dangerous virus. We have been seeing the numbers trending down. And we have certainly seen the vaccination numbers going up. But as the experts say, there are variants out there that is absolutely wreaking havoc in other countries. And we do not want that to happen with our country, so or our region. So let's make sure we're continuing to watch that. The vaccine. I hope that all of you listening plan to get the vaccine. That vaccine is so critical. It's extremely important, and we need to make sure that we get it. If you're 65 and older, you already qualify, please get it. If you're an educator, if you work in the school system, your cafeteria worker there, if you work with the maintenance staff or the custodial staff, please make sure that you get in line to get this vaccine. We need as many people in our community getting it as possible. This is another thing that's going to help us fight back at this thing to so that, you know, we actually have some protection now. When this virus first kicked off about a year ago this month, we didn't have anything that we really knew of that we could fight it with. You know, it was just making sure that we used medicine as we knew it to be a part of that process. And so with that said, we have a little bit more tools, and we certainly want to make sure that we're using them to the best of our ability. This is Women's History Month. You know, the month of March, we pause to recognize women that have made significant impacts in our nation, in our local community, in our state, in our region. And so we certainly want to continue that theme. And I'm excited about my guest today. But before I tell you a little bit more about her, because our conversation today is going to somewhat touch on something I wanted to talk to you about today as well, and that is Senate Bill 241. I don't know if you've heard by now, but there are bills being pushed through the state legislature by the Republican Party that will tremendously hinder people's rights and opportunities to vote. As a matter of fact, I have heard so many historical leaders, from the civil rights time and things of that nature, that says that what they're trying to do is take us back to that period. So, you know, just to give you a little information on it, Senate Bill 241, it would end the right to vote by mail without having to provide an excuse, for one. Right now, you know, with coronavirus and everything else going on, people have had the option of saying, I don't want to go to the actual polls. Please send me a ballot and I will vote via mail. They want to totally take that away unless you have some type of excuse for having to vote via mail. Yeah, sounds crazy, right? Seems like we want to give as many people as possible access to vote, but they're trying to take those away. And so one thing to keep in mind is that more than 1.3 million people voted by mail in 2020 in a general election in our state, in the state of Georgia. Under the bill that they are proposing, only people 65 and older or who have one of a handful of state approved excuses would be allowed to vote by mail. Just 16 other states currently require a voter to give an excuse to vote by mail. Right now, only 16. But we're seeing this being a national trend as folks continue to try to propel the falsehoods that somehow this election was stolen in some kind of way, or that was mass fraud that no one has found yet. We're still looking for the fraud. But they are passing these bills because they do control the Senate and they control the state house. The Republicans do. They're pushing this through to prevent some of the creative measures that we have seen in the past, like souls to the polls, where churches would get together and the congregations would go vote on the same Sunday. They're even trying to limit it Sunday voting. So you get the gist of what's happening. They do have the control. They have the numbers. And it's highly likely that these bills will pass. I will tell you an interesting point about this, though, is that the lieutenant governor was not happy at all with what has been going on. As a matter of fact, he did not participate in the vote. He left out of the chamber. He said he would not participate. So it's going to be interesting to see what Governor Kemp has to say about this, considering Governor Kemp has been fighting for his own political career when Donald Trump accused him and Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, of being in cahoots somehow with the Democrats to steal the election from Donald Trump. Yeah, go figure. The Republican governor and the Republican Secretary of State working with the Democratic Party to steal the election is laughable. It's laughable, you guys. But that's what these people are operating off of. It's irreprehensible right now what is happening, and that people would be in the most sacred house we have, our state house, attempting to deprive folks of access to the ballot polls, access to go vote, access to voice their opinion as a person. So I'm excited about my guest that I have today. She's an amazing lady. Let me just start there. Ever since my wife and I have had an opportunity to meet her, she's always been so cordial, so amazing, so sweet, so professional, and full of advice, good advice too. That auntie / motherly advice, you know, just that great advice. But she also has a history of working with groups around this country, from Ohio down to Georgia, working, fighting issues just like the bill that I just talked to you about. So I am honored to have with me today my Sunday conversation with Teda Reese, honoree for Women's History Month, Miss Olive Marie Kendall. How you doing today, Miss Olive?
I'm fine, Teddy. How are you? And thank you for inviting me to be on with you today.
Yes,
I'm excited as well.
Well, that is great. I tell you, when I first began to work on the process of getting you on the air with me, I couldn't contain myself, because you and I've been in a privileged position to have so many conversations with you. So I know your background and I know your passion and I know your work. So just right off, how do you feel about the Senate bills that are being pushed through that's going to tremendously limit people's access to the voting polls?
Well, I see this bill, House Bill 241, is trying to push us back to what are called the old Jim Crow days, of when we were struggling for the right to vote and other people were working with us to be able to get the right to vote. I wasn't involved in the civil rights movement during that time, but as a young college graduate, and I moved to Cleveland, Ohio, I became involved more in politics then, working with Carl Stokes, who was the first black mayor of a major city, and then Lou Stokes, his brother, who became a congressman. So they took time and took some of us and taught us about politics. But one of the things that they took a lot of time to do that I think we need to do more of, and we have a great start in Georgia, is grassroots mobilization. How we're going, we've done a great job, but with this new bill, Senate Bill 241, it means that we have more work to do. We can't stop. We can't wait until 2022. We've got to start working today to make sure that everyone who is entitled to vote can vote, and that we put strategies in place to accomplish getting people to the polls, to cast their vote.
You know, I remember when serving the people in the state house or in Congress was one of the highest acts of honor that required the highest level of integrity, of of transparency, of honesty, and that mattered to the people. And to see that an entire slew of bills that's going to definitely have the effect of hindering people's ability and freedom to get to the polls or cast a vote via absentee ballot, to see that happening on the foundation, on their foundation, that we had mass voter issues here in Georgia, voter fraud, irregularities, things of that nature, that even the Republican Secretary of State said is not true, that even the governor has said, the Republican governor has said is not true. No court in America would recognize this foolishness nor give a hearing to it to advance it in any manner. Where are we today in politics, Ms. Ollie?
Well, one of the things that I think has happened over time is that we have people who really have not taken time within voters who don't know, first of all, the history of how hard we fought. We're lacking in what I call statesmen who can work across the aisles and who have their constituents first and not themselves first. We are in a crossroads for where we're going as a democracy. Our democracy is being challenged, and we can't sit idly by and allow this to happen. People lost their lives for us to be able to vote, and that's why I'm saying we have to put strategies in place to make sure that our communities, underrepresented communities, are allowed to cast their vote. We need to make sure that we assist. That means that we help people to be able to get the voter ID that they need to be able to request an absentee ballot. It means that we go into our neighborhood safely and make sure that we have people who are not registered to vote, that they are registering to vote. It means that we as a community have to come together, not one group over here doing one thing and another group doing another, but that we all come together. Our churches, all churches, our social and civic organizations, our politicians, everybody's going to have to be at the table so that we have a strategy, not just a national strategy, but that we have a strategy within our state, that we have a strategy within each community, because each community is different. There are different barriers in different communities. So we need to bring all of this to the table and see how we're going to make sure that in 2020 we are represented and that we turn out the way we turned out in 20. It's going to be important that we, in turn, also look at the people that we support on the ballot. If people are not working in your best interest, you need to step back, and say, no, is this person, have they demonstrated that they really have my best interest and our community's best interest at heart? If not, we need to look for other people that we will support who will then represent us in a way that we feel we need to be represented.
You know, and that's a very good point, because right now it appears with these bills, and especially with as it relates to Senate Bill 241, it appears that the ship has left the dock. You know, the Senate passed it with a very thin margin of 29-20. I mean, it literally went down party lines. And it appears that the House is on its way to doing the same thing. The Republican-controlled state House is going to do the same thing. And, you know, if that happens, then we got to be prepared anyway, which I think is what you're referring to, because the simple fact, if we do a good job at raising the awareness of the issues and making sure that people understand the importance of their participation, it doesn't matter how many days. It can be one day. Now, it's horrible what they're doing, but I think that Democrats has a capability here, has a window here to use this against them. Let's campaign with this. Let's really energize people to get out and vote during the appropriate times based on the fact that they tried to steal their voice and their vote from them. So we're talking about real grassroots organizing. We're talking about real community strategies. We're talking about walking the streets and knocking on doors and visit places that politicians normally wouldn't go. Our campaigns normally wouldn't go. How did y'all do that back then, on Olive? What was the strategy on really getting down in the communities?
Well, one of the things that was stressed when we were young and we were being taught about grassroots organizing is that you also have to go into a community willing to learn about that community. And you learn about a community by, first of all, finding who the informal leaders are in that community. Every community has informal leaders, people that are not out front, that you wouldn't even expect to be a leader in that community. And once you determine who the informal leader is, one of the things that we always tend to do when we go in with programming or something, we do what we think is going to work in the community. When you engage informal leaders and others in that community, they can tell you what it takes to mobilize people in their communities, who the leaders are, who the trusted voices are that you need to go to that can help you work that community and get people out to vote. We also would go to the community with our clipboard, knock on doors. What time do you have transportation to the polls? No, what time would you like to go? And cars and church buses or vans or whatever, people from all aspects of the community lined up on streets throughout the Cleveland community, driving people back and forth to the polls all day. Some of us made a point of always taking off on election day because we didn't have absentee voting. We didn't have extended voting days. We voted on the day that was declared the day to vote, the Tuesday that you were to vote. So we just made sure that we took care of transportation barriers, that we organized the community in such a way that all day people were just taking people to the polls that they couldn't get there. Lou and Carl Stokes were also about educating. And one of the things that I remembered growing up, even in Columbus, Georgia, was that in our church, people would be in the church talking about the amendment, talking about candidates. That's something that we lost. And educating people in the churches played a vital role in the education of the community around things that were important to the community, how voting for an amendment would either be a pro or a con. I mean, just a lot of work went on in our churches and in other organizations in our community. And I think we have to re-energize that, and also we have to bring young people into the fold so that they start learning how to be organizers in their in our communities, that they start learning about the political process, that they get excited so that they want to be a part of, and that they start talking to their friends about how excited they are. And just let this be a time when we go back old school, as I call it, and do some of those things that worked before we had some of the luxuries that we've become accustomed to through the voting process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I 100% agree with you on that. And, you know, one thing that one of my mentors, one of my biggest mentors, Congressman Sanford Bishop, often says to me is that we all stand on the shoulders of giants. And what I mean by that is somewhere in the process, someone sacrificed, someone gave for you to be in the position that you're in, your position of new height. And in your position, once you are there and once you are working and engaged, you have to provide that foundation for folks to follow you. And that's the only way growth will continue for us as a people, as a culture, as a community, is if we support each other and make sure that we constantly have a streamline of talent, people prepared to carry on the battle. It's preparing the next generation to lead the fight. And considering that, there are so many young women out there that truly just idolize you and talk to you and talk about you in such positive ways and your impact on their lives. As a matter of fact, when I was talking with Janice Granville about me doing this interview, she was like, "Oh, I love Miss Olive." I said, "Yes, I love Aunt Olive too." So she had to come back and tell me, "Well, you know, that's my link sister Olive as well." So, you know, I said, "Janice, you win. Okay, you win. You win." But Aunt Olive, what's your assessment of the current leadership of women in our local area? I know you got to be proud to see so many great leaders locally, female leaders, taking the helm, making a difference, you know, challenging historical norms, you know, for many of us when it was mainly just a lot of white males. But now we're seeing more people of color, but most importantly, we're seeing more women. How does that make you feel?
Of course, you know, Teddy, you and I have been having these conversations for years, and it wasn't just about women. It was also about giving opportunities to young people and helping them to learn the process so that of what it takes to get into politics so that they then could start working and learning and being mentored by people who could help them to move into the political arena if they wanted to. And I am very proud of the fact that there are young women who are doing things in the community, even those that you don't see, who are working behind the scenes and getting out the vote and working with other national and local entities to make sure that they're educating people. And I still feel that while we have so many young women, you know, we have we have the new council person.
Toya Tucker.
As well as I know it. Toya Tucker. Tonza Thomas, who's been working. My niece several of my nieces now have started working with different organizations in an effort to educate and also just hit the ground running as grassroots workers to be able to talk to their constituents about young people running for office and getting a taste of what this political arena is like in our city.
Absolutely.
And we've talked about it, and my friends, my colleagues all know that I'm very passionate about us giving young people a chance to move forward and become a part of this process, and even to run for office.
Well, how do
women, of course, young women, young African American women, we're seeing that across the nation, and we need to see more of that in our community.
So, speaking to the
young people to run for office.
Speaking to the young folks that may be listening right now, who hear exactly what you're saying, and they 100% agree with you. But at the same time, they know that if they attempt to do something like that or run for office or make their voice heard, that there's a segment of our community that may try to demonize them for seeking what they consider to be someone's seat, even though all the seats belong to the people. You know, what's your advice to them of dealing with that really unreasonable scrutiny of them pursuing an office that someone else may be in?
I guess I was told when I was living in Ohio, really, that, as you said, the seat doesn't belong to any one person. It belongs to the people. And if you're a young person and you're really interested, I think, in running for a political position, that you need to talk to some of the people who are now in politics to get a feel. And I think we have to do more of that as the seasoned group, those persons who are there, to start sharing information, training sessions. Talk to people about mentoring you. Let them know that you're interested, that you're looking for a mentor. You're not trying to step in. I'm not trying to undercut you or anything. I'm letting you know that I am interested, that I would like to be mentored. And, you know, like anything else, Teddy, if you don't find that people are willing, then that doesn't have to stop you from working and striving toward your own dreams. You know, you don't let anybody kill your dreams. You have to prepare yourself. One of the things that you know, I would say to young people, you need to read. Read as much as you can. You now have all of these other mediums where you can educate yourself.
Absolutely.
And if that's your dream to make a difference in your community, then you shouldn't let anybody deter you from going after your dream, but also in the process, be respectful. There's, you know, respect goes a long way. So if you're respectful and honest in your views and in your assessment of what's going on in our community, then I think you should go for it. One of the things that I'm hearing, you know, from young people that I work with, and all of our ideas are not the same, and we don't always view things the same way that generations behind us view situations. But together, we can still work for the best for our community and to strive to make Columbus the best community that we possibly can, with the best representation that represents everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just got to go back and touch on that word respect. And, you know, I think that's something we need to put more emphasis on. And we need to truly highlight that respect is a two-way street. You know, you give it and you expect it. We're talking about respect. And so I absolutely 100% agree with you on that. Ms. Olive, we are at a point where we got to start wrapping up here. I tell you, when you're having a good conversation, time certainly flies. But you are certainly one of our honorees for this month, for Women's History Month. I'm glad you could take the time to speak with us. I want to thank you for all that you have done in our community to keep people engaged, to inform the community, the work that you've done earlier in your life, being a part of grassroots efforts, talking about ways to combat things like Senate Bill 241 right now that they're trying to do to depress the vote. There actions will only work if we allow it to work. But if we work harder, we can certainly get around what they are trying to do. And I want to give you the last word on the show today as our honoree, and with this being Women History Month, just leave us with a word of inspiration, if you will.
Dream big, work hard, prepare yourself, and know that there are always those who will undergird your efforts. Teddy, I'd like to thank you so much for inviting me to be on your program today. I feel honored. I feel blessed that you would even feel that I was someone that you wanted to have a conversation with. My heart is full, and I just am very, very honored. Thank you so very much for inviting me.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much, and you take care, and we'll be talking soon, okay?
Okay. All right. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. The guest today was Miss Olive Marie Kendall, just such an amazing lady doing so much work in the community. That didn't start yesterday. She's been doing it for a very long time. And I tell you, she's still over there at Columbus Tech helping many of our young folks every day. And that's an amazing thing. So thank you so much again. Make sure you join us next Sunday, March the 21st. We will be back in the building with another wonderful conversation as we continue to celebrate Women's History Month all over the Chattahoochee Valley. Take care.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.